to Shattering Myths. I'd like to continue our passage through Questioning Paul. Questioning Paul, if you'd prefer to read what we're sharing, it is available at questioningpaul.com. If you just Google Questioning Paul, you'll be brought right to the site. By the way, some good news. The website yadaya.com is back up, and it's back up in its original format, which was written or presented in HTML, as opposed to using the scribed process that we used for a couple of years. Now that it's on back up and in HTML, we have the advantage of the fact that those who like to read on their iPads and their iPhones now have the capacity to do so. Also, as a news item, all of the books, the various volumes of the Introduction to God, the various volumes of Yada Yah, and hopefully even Prophet of Doom, In the Company of Good and Evil, the first book I wrote, Tea with Terrorists. The hope is to very soon have all of them available for Kindle. Now, in the Kindle format in the Amazon store, they have to be sold. They'll be sold for a fairly nominal cost, and the proceeds that we receive from that cost will be used to defray the rising cost of hosting the sites where they're all available free. But for those who you know, would like to own a copy of these books and have them on their Kindle, that is soon going to be possible. Also, by way of just update before we return to questioning Paul, at this moment, two of the websites are operational. Introduction to God is back up completely. Not introduction. YadaYah.com is up completely. That's the first book I wrote. It's on scriptural on Yahweh's prophecy. It begins with the creation account and presenting the creation account from a scientific perspective. It then goes into the science behind the flood, and from there presents the covenant and the everything associated with the covenant. It's a very compelling and interesting initial volume. Strongly recommend it. If you want to know who Yahweh is, and if you want absolute proof that he exists, and how you can get to know him, volume one of yadaya.com, Y-A-D-A, which means to know. Yah is short for Yahweh. YAH.com is a powerful read. The second volume of the book is also powerful. It's based upon the seven invitations to meet with Yahweh each year. It explains what they are, when these dates occur, what we can learn from them, how we can benefit from them. It is the path to from our world to God's home, and therefore about being part of his family and also being saved by him. It is about the best investment of your time that I can think of. The third volume of the book is devoted to a comparison between Yisrael at the time of Hosha, around 700 BCE, and the West today. It is an interesting comparison that provides a number of insights that are quite helpful. The book then presents the eyewitness accounts of what occurred in 33 CE, but not from the perspective of the disciples, but instead from the perspective of the prophets. And so it will provide readers with precisely what occurred as eyewitnesses 1,000 years before the events took place, particularly Doeg to David and Yashayah, Isaiah. What they were given the opportunity to witness exactly what occurred during the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah in 33 CE, 700 to 1,000 years before these events occurred. And their presentation is vastly more accurate, complete, and insightful than anything you would read in Yaukanan or in Matanya, the two disciples' books presented in the Greek eyewitness accounts. So that's also available for your consideration. And quite soon we'll have the first four or five chapters up of the last days so that you will have the opportunity to see what God says is on our immediate horizon. We, in this show, devoted several months to presenting the prophecies of Yeshaya 17 and 18 because they are so relevant to our day. They chronicle the proxy war being fought in Syria. They tell us what the consequence of that war ultimately is, how it's going to lead to sacrificing Israel, making the nation thinner at the waist, how that's going to invite Islamic terrorists to flood into the country and in great numbers, and the devastation that they will bring, as well as an overt appraisal that is condemning of the United States in the midst of all of that. We are hopeful that within a week's time we will have the Introduction to God up. I think now you can actually click on the PDFs. But we'll have Introduction to God up in HTML probably within a week's time. We have no idea what we're going to do with Prophet Adom. You know, the denial of service attacks on it perpetrated by Muslims who don't want anyone to know the truth about how revolting Muhammad was, how disgusting Allah is, and a book that they can't refute because it's based entirely on the five earliest Islamic sources. The cost of trying to bring it back up is something that is of, well, it's just unpalatable. This current month, for example, within this last month, Rackspace, who has hosted the site, charged me $3,000 and didn't even have the site up. So they charged me $3,000 because of the denial of service attacks on a site that they didn't even have up at the time. So it's, you know, just extraordinarily abusive on behalf of Rackspace to have me pay a penalty for a service they were not providing. But to offset that is extraordinarily costly. I don't know what the solution is other than perhaps just making the book and also Muhammad's own words, the topical arrangement of what Muhammad had to say, making that available via Kindle or that kind of download may be the best that we will be able to do in that regard. So that's an update as to where we are. Now, returning to questioning Paul. This is towards the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and we are considering what Yahusha had to say because what he had to say was the antithesis of what Paul said. If you listen to us these last few weeks, you recognize that Paul, in the middle of the book of Galatians, his letter of to the Galatians in the third chapter, said that the Torah could not save, that the Torah had been done away with, that the Torah was mean-spirited, and that the Torah enslaved. And so we're now considering what Yahusha had to say. That's the real name of the person corrupted to Jesus. What he had to say about that very same Torah, as well as recognizing who you should trust and who you shouldn't trust. Just because you see someone's letter in your Bible doesn't mean that that person's letter ought to be there or that it is inspired. Yahusha told us how we can determine whether somebody is speaking the truth or not, and so did Yahweh. Now, with Yahusha's comments, he is saying something that is extraordinarily profound, and that from his perspective, it's all or nothing. That if a person professes anything that is untrue while claiming to speak for God, then everything that they themselves are rotten and their letters are rotten. That so long as there is any statement that's inappropriate, and we've just considered four where Paul lied, where he misquoted Yahweh, took his statements out of context and twisted them to imply the opposite of what God actually said. that any one of those by itself is sufficient to discard all of Paul's letters, because he says nothing good comes from a bad tree. Now, from a bad source. The test that Yahusha is applying is all or nothing. It's either all correct or it is absolute rubbish. It's poison. Don't go near it. And since we've already shown, and we will show hundreds more examples of what Paul said was untrue, that even if you like something that he said, the very individual who was the living manifestation of the Word of God said, no. No, it's rotten. It's all or nothing. So here's more of what he had to say. We're now in Matan Yah. Yah's gift is what his name means, Matthew 7:20. So indeed, by their fruit, you will be able, through careful observation and studious contemplation, actually know and understand them. The word that I've translated as through careful observation and studious contemplation, you'll be able to know and understand them, is the Greek epikinosko. Now, I've made this point, but I need to make it again and again. Yahusha did not speak Greek. He did not speak English. Could he have spoken Greek if he wanted to? Sure, but he didn't. He spoke Hebrew and perhaps some Aramaic. I suspect that almost everything he said in Hebrew. In fact, based upon who he was talking to, the language spoken by those he was talking to, and the statements that he was citing from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and who he is, I suspect that about 99% of what he said was in Hebrew, not in Aramaic. Maybe 1% was in Aramaic. When he was speaking to the religious establishment, to the political establishment, when he was confronting them and demeaning them and criticizing them and besmirching their reputations, he well could have been speaking in Aramaic because that was the language that they preferred. Although most of them would have known Hebrew, and there's no reason that he could not have spoken Hebrew even then. But the common language of the common people, which is who Yahusha spoke to the most often, including this, the Sermon on the Mount, was absolutely in Hebrew. We'll be back in a moment. So recognizing that Yahusha absolutely did not speak Hebrew, absolutely did not speak English, and was speaking, he was absolutely speaking Hebrew, and absolutely was not speaking Greek or English at this time. Recognizing that, then you can't make too big a deal out of epikinosko. Although, you know, my whole mindset is to analyze the words and to amplify them. And so, you know, I'm going to make an attempt at it. But understand my case here is extraordinarily weak. Because in this particular case, Yahusha is likely to have used BN. Now, there's a possibility he used Yada. I can't tell you which one he would have used, but he used one of the two. He says, so then indeed, by their fruit, then it would have been either BN or Yada. Now, the difference between BN and Yada is BN, you have to begin with Yada. In Hebrew, you have to begin with yada even once you understand what the concept is in English. To yada is to know. To yada is to recognize. To yada is to acknowledge. It's personal information. It's relational information. It's making connections through information. It's not just knowing that Yahweh is the Father of the Covenant. It's not just knowing that he has invited us to meet with him seven times a year. It's not just knowing what the terms and conditions are of the covenant. It's not just knowing what those seven invitations each represent and how we can best observe them. It's by making the connection so that we relate all of them to who Yahweh is. what he wants, what he's offering, what he expects. So it's relational knowledge. It's taking knowledge and making the necessary connections. And beyond that, acknowledging it as valid. You know, when you acknowledge information, you know, I acknowledge my relationship with my wife. You know, I will commit to that relationship. I will acknowledge our relationship. I will profess I am her husband. You know, I love my wife. That kind of acknowledgement goes beyond just simply knowing. And that's what yada represents. So it's a very powerful term. Don't get me wrong. It's an extremely powerful term. That's why I called the first series of books that I wrote called Yada Yah, to know Yahweh, to acknowledge Yahweh, to relate to Yahweh, yada yah. Now, bien is related to yada. You can't bien without yada. Unless you know the information and know the individual that is offering this information, you don't have a prayer of understanding it. But that's what yada, what bien means. It means to understand by making connections. Bien can be translated one of two ways in Hebrew. Either as between and designating a connection between things, or as understanding. And that is because the method to understanding is making connections between things. You can know a lot of things and not understand anything. It happens in scholarship a lot. Journalists who write know a lot of things, but they don't seem to understand the subject they're writing about. Professors teach a lot of things, but they don't understand the world in which we live. Now, to understand, you have to be able to exercise good judgment. You have to be willing not only to study the information, but make the necessary connections and to be discerning. Political correctness is a poison to understanding. You can know lots of things in political correctness, but you can't make the necessary connections. That's why those who are politically correct will drive around with a bumper sticker that says coexist, comprised of a group of political and religious symbols that are cannot coexist, that are diametrically opposed to one another. And so it's just means that they know that those are the symbols, but they haven't the capacity to transition from knowing to understanding. So he could have used BN here. And if he used BN, then it would be similar to epikonosko. Now, in Greek, so that you know, there are three different levels of knowledge. The first is that, okay, I'm aware of this. The second is, I know this, because I've done some thinking about it, and I've done some research. And the last, epikonosko, is the strongest form of knowing. And it means I have investigated the evidence, I've thought about it, I've made the necessary connections, and I'm here to tell you, I understand this. And that's the term that's used here. So since epikonosko speaks of that which can be known for certain based upon a close examination and careful evaluation of the available evidence, this concept is being presented as the antithesis of, and thus as an alternative to, faith. So while I can't make a big deal about the word epikonosko, because Yahusha would have either said yada or bien in this particular case, if I'm going to evaluate the evidence that's in the Christian New Testament, then it's absolutely fair to hold epikonosko against Paul's love for pistis, which pistis used to be the Greek word for trust and rely, but Paul's usage of it is wholly disassociated with the information and understanding required to either trust or to rely. And so it is correctly rendered faith in English Bibles. Faith is the antithesis of knowing for certain. So that comparison in the Greek text is valid. Even though Yahusha didn't speak Greek, if we're going to talk about the so-called Christian New Testament, since it's all in Greek, this comparison, therefore, is valid. And the comparison between epikonosko, which is knowledge for absolute certain, based on a comprehensive evaluation of the information available to us, and a rational comprehension of it, to come to knowledge and understanding with absolute certainty that it is wholly and completely opposed to the concept of faith. Faith is what you have when you don't know. Belief is what you have when you don't understand. When you know and understand, neither have any merit. It's one of the things that is very difficult for so many people to appreciate. We've been indoctrinated into a culture where people will ask, do you believe in God? And my answer is no. I know him. Once you know him, why would you believe in him? And, you know, it's not that I'm special in terms of knowing God. He presents himself in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms in a way that enables us to know him. He not only proves his existence through prophecy, he also proves his existence through the precise presentation of the information. For example, his presentation of the creation account, which when you apply what we know, you come to realize that from his perspective at creation, that 14 to 15 billion years is exactly 6 24-hour days on Earth, based upon the nature of relativity and how time moves in depending on one's relative position. And then you look at each of the events in the order that he said that they were conceived and the terminology that he uses, it is impossible that that account was scribed 3,600 years ago by a sheep herder. And then when you consider the great soaring oratory, the brilliant commentary, the very merit, the substance of the plan and the relationships that God is sharing with us, and the depth of understanding that is inherent in every word, you come to realize that this is coming from an intellect that is vastly beyond what any human has ever been able to surmise. And then, of course, there's the way that God is most prone to prove his existence, which is through prophecy. Because he exists like the Hebrew language, free in time, not like us, which are stuck in the ordinary flow of time. He is capable as light to witness the past, present, and future simultaneously. That's the way time exists on a photon of light. Time simply is, just like the Hebrew language. There isn't a past, present, and future tense in Hebrew. Hebrew simply is, always true. And so when you recognize that as light, he's able to witness our future, actually see where our choices lead us, and then report in our past what we have chosen to do in our future. And he's right 100% of the time, even in the smallest details. That after a while, the only rational choice is to say, this was inspired by a being that isn't constrained by time. And since this being is always right, everything he said is correct, and he's never inconsistent, never contradicts himself, and is offering the most brilliant plan imaginable, and talks about creation exactly the way it happened and the time and the order that it happened, you can absolutely come to know him. He presents who he is in the midst of this text. So there's no reason to believe in God. You can know him. If you choose not to know him, that's your fault, because you didn't take the time, because you weren't interested. But he can be known. So there's absolutely no reason for belief if you can know. Why would you say, I believe in God, when you say, no, I know him? In fact, I rather like him. And When you move from belief to faith, this idea that, you know, you have faith in the gospel of grace. Well, what in the world is that? There's no such thing as a gospel. You know, there's, even in the time that Paul wrote his letters, there were no gospels. Even if you want to pretend for a moment that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are gospels, none of the four existed at the time that Paul coined his letter. And even if they did, they weren't called gospels. You can't have faith in a gospel because the gospels didn't exist and they still don't exist. They're, the term that is used in Greek to describe what these things are is euangelion. It means good message or beneficial messenger. It's from you and agelos. Agelos is the Hebrew, is the Greek word for message and messenger. It's actually for messenger and therefore for message. And you means beneficial, good, helpful. So you can't get gospel out of that. Now, moreover, the grace is the name of a pagan goddess. We went over that in the first part of the program. It's the Charis in Greek. They were the goddesses of lust and party and merriment and hedonism, and they became the Gratia in Rome. In fact, you know, if you, there's a movie out called Pompeii. I've been there. And they're the most frequent frescoes, and they're always shown as a threesome, all naked, all in rooms where the Romans would have been decadent. And so this idea that faith, which is not knowing, and a non-existent thing, gospel, attributed to pagan nude goddesses, and you think that that's going to save you, you're not thinking. And that's the difference between belief and knowing and understanding. And we have a actual surprise here. Normally, Glenn calls in the first 2 hours of the program, and we chat about events in the news, but my line eyes say that Glenn is here, and we're talking about Yosha's testimony at this point. How are you, Glenn?
Hello, yeah, I'm doing okay. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, very good. I work night shift and had paperwork to do, go to the office, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up listening now.
Okay.
All I hear you do, struggling with prepositional prefixes. Another doubt that you're going to be, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm not sure you're going to get the average listener to grasp, understand, or get the nuances you're trying to convey. It's funny. I mean, I'm not sure which Hebrew word, you know, Yahshua would have used when he was saying, you know, by your fruits, you know, shall you know them. But epigenosko is not too bad. And
epigenosko would be a decent, in fact, a really good translation of BN. Gnosko would be a good translation of yada, and awaida, which is the common word for recognize in Greek, which means it's just, you know, you've taken a look and that's what it appears to be, but you haven't done any research.
Well, compared to the English counterpart, understand, you know, let's say you're looking at the Eiffel Tower from afar, you can see there. But when you stand under it, you understand it. You're right there. You know.
Okay. Is that good?
Literally. I mean, I suppose where you're more like oversee or understand.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have the prepositional prefix and giving you the positional aspect that's supposed to be conveying something about perspective and up close and personal.
That's a really good point there. You know, I've never thought about the English word as a prepositional prefix to understand, but
under is a prepositional prefix on
right.
stand.
You know, no, I understand. No, you're. I'm agreeing with you. I just have never. I've never. You know, my job here, my mission, is to analyze Hebrew primarily and secondarily Greek. But I don't take much time in trying to add insights into English. But you are right. Understand, and it's a powerful preposition. Under. Where you're standing, what you're standing right. under, because of the fact what it provides is perspective, and perspective is the thing that you gain when you transition from knowledge to understanding. It's perspective that is the net result.
Well, and epigenosko, epi is your prepositional prefix. I'm sorry,
correct.
The noise there. Epi is a prepositional prefix meaning around. You know,
right.
So we have the idea of wrapping your mind around something or walking around something,
right.
circumambulating
right.
it, really understanding it.
Right. Well, excellent analysis of words, and I wouldn't sell our listeners this short. Our listeners have a real fondness for words and words being used accurately and an understanding of the terminology, and I think you've enriched all of us. That was well done, Glenn. As we return and consider this term, whether it be understand, you know, what you're standing under, and the Glenn's comment on the Eiffel Tower, you have a perspective of it. You can understand the scope of the Eiffel Tower, even how the rivets and metal pieces are pieced together to create this tower when you're standing underneath it, providing you with a perspective, a fascinating insight into the English word. The, you know, around understanding is epigenosko. It's the strongest form of understanding in Greek. It was meant to convey that you have done a comprehensive job of evaluating the information that's available, and based upon that, you have formed conclusions, and therefore you know from a or you understand conclusively. Not based on opinions, not based on faith, but based on factual information that you've gathered and analyzed. So it is it's a nice comparison to the concept of faith, which is quite different. Would you agree with that, Glenn?
Furthermore, like we also have sometimes a colloquial word that helps. Like back in the 90s, there was a popular concept among techies. Young techies would say, "Oh, I grok that," G-R-O-K, which was a deliberate, you know, it meant to say that you get it, but you really get it. That you get
right.
it at the visceral level, fully comprehend it.
Right.
You'll have humans. Conveying that we know is nothing new. You know, we invent words to try and convince somebody to really get something. Or,
right.
you know, we say, "I really get that."
Right.
You know, would be a good a modern English equivalent.
Right.
But then in terms of knowing also, knowing someone or knowing Yahweh.
Yes.
And one of the things you just got to embrace is that sometimes, you know, people, when you open a dictionary, you have more than one definition for a word, you know.
Right.
And there's going to be people who aren't going to accept your denotation for the word no. In other words, when you say you know Yahweh via his Torah,
mm-hmm.
okay, then an atheist is going to say, no, you don't, you know, because he's not flesh and blood, he's not here, there's no, you know. In other words, like, you can convey the idea, and people will variously accept or reject the notion
yeah.
that you do know.
Yeah.
Well, you say
yeah.
you know, but you don't really know.
Just, yeah,
you know.
But I would argue with that proposition.
Sure.
Yeah, by saying that for example, there's a chiseled piece of Santa Barbara sandstone that is comprising a wall that's at the end of my garden here, and if I were to analyze that stone, I could come up with the components that comprise the sandstone. And although it's not flesh and blood, it can be analyzed and understood. Words are that way.
Yeah,
words are that way. Words are the components of communication, and the basis of knowing is words. You can analyze words and come to the same thing. Just because Yahweh is spirit and therefore energy, not matter, doesn't short circuit in any way the process of knowing.
And I'm not sure. I'm not even sure I would. Well, see, this is where this is parsing words, and it can get to be a problem. I don't mean to be troublesome, but I might say that I might not even agree that Yahweh is energy, actually, because our understanding of, like, energy exists within space-time, and Yahweh himself characterizes himself as pure consciousness, and he is the one who created the space-time continuum in which matter and energy exist. So I would say that Yahweh actually transcends our comprehension. He is the I Am. He is the transcendent consciousness one.
That's valid. But valid up to a point again. And by the way, we're not actually disagreeing on any of this. This is the kind of discussion that I think is going to make eternity more interesting. Is you can have a different perspective on something and discuss it this way. This is actually a meritorious discussion. Yahweh describes himself as light. Does that mean that he is a photon of light? Of course not. What it means is that. The best thing that we have, the closest thing that we can understand in our world that describes his nature is light. And so we come to know him more accurately and understand him better when we appreciate his relationship to light. Doesn't mean he is light. It means that helps us know him and understand him. We'll be back tomorrow.